Listen to shoot the defence. It's unbelievable, Jeff.
Hello, welcome to another edition of Shoot the Defence on FNX, brought to you by The Life of A. I'm your host, Stel, and my two guests this evening are two of the world's best, if not the best, FIFA esports commentators. A duo that puts many seasoned professionals, it's a shame. I mean, I'm looking at all these professionals in Dubai and Abu Dhabi and being sports, whatever shows you want to talk about, NBC, and these guys are putting them to shame. Absolutely. They are. I mean, I've worked with these guys. I was in the Netherlands with them covering the Sport Ego E-League. It was a fantastic tournament, and the two guys, to be fair, they actually held it down for me. You know, I was struggling a little bit, and without these two guys, it probably would have bombed, to be fair. It's Richard Buckley and Brandon Smith. Gents, welcome to the show. It's actually great to have you both on.
Thanks for having us, mate. Doing great work, and looking forward to get stuck into some World Cup action. We're usually talking about the virtual game, but got a few opinions about the real thing.
That's great to hear. Brandon, you good, mate?
Yes, very well still, mate. Thank you so much for having us on. And as you mentioned, mate, it was good fun in Holland. And fingers crossed, going to FIFA 19, we might be able to meet up again.
I hope so, hope so. I tell you, before we start, gents, what have you guys been doing since we met up in the Netherlands?
I think, if anything, just taking a breath. it's been a busy period for us from like January till kind of early. We'll say late May, actually, just covering a number of the FIFA events going forward into the big grand final, which is happening in London in August. But this is kind of our period now to just take a few months off, you could say, take a few weeks off, and then we'll, you know, as Richard said before, just wait for the phone to call again, maybe. But we're ready. You know, if anyone wants to do a FIFA event and they need commentators, we're ready any day of the week.
Absolutely, and you guys really know your stuff, and I'm not just saying this because you guys are on. I've been watching your material for a long time, watching your podcasts, your YouTube channels. It's absolutely sensational what you guys are doing. You know, I know you guys don't have a massive budget, I don't have a massive budget, but to see you guys do so well, to turn up at these events, you guys went to Barcelona, didn't you, for the World Cup?
Yeah, it's been great, to be honest. Started it probably last June, last May time. Just some of the places that we'll be able to travel with FIFA: Qatar, Los Angeles, San Francisco, Barcelona, you said Amsterdam there, Sweden, all over the world, really, covering FIFA, and long may it continue.
Absolutely. So anyone that's a budding esports commentator, getting these guys good books, because they'll help you. Honestly, they're good lads. They're really good lads. And you know what? It's going to be difficult to get a stranglehold with these guys about, I'm telling you. They're good. They know what they're doing. They really know their stuff. Right, gents, let's talk about the World Cup. And yesterday was a day of first in the competition. France and Denmark played out the first 0-0 draw, and Peru grabbed their first win. Oh, and Messi grabbed his first goal, which is great for him, I guess. Brandon, nothing really to discuss in the France-Denmark game, although I'm neither disappointed or surprised it ended goalless. One side's strategy is to sit back and hit their opponents on the break, while the other is a team full of big names who've pretty much flattered to deceive so far. What's your take on both sides' performances in the tournament so far?
We're talking about France, aren't we?
Yeah, both for France and
Denmark. Yeah. I was going to say. Well, I've actually got France in a sweepstake. We kind of did a thing with my mates. We got two top seeded teams each. My two teams are Portugal and France. So I've been keeping a bit of an eye on France, to be honest. I think they've been going steady, France, but I think they've definitely got another gear to their game, which hopefully we'll see in the knockouts, and I think they have to give it in the knockouts. On the other side of that, you know, that group in general, I thought Australia were given a bit of a fight for a period, and then obviously that result yesterday was a bit of a shock for me. But overall, I think France they've had the hardest of groups, but they've got the group stuff done, and I want to see if they've got that another gear, as I said, in the knockout stages.
And what about Denmark? Because they had a fantastic clean sheet record going into this tournament. The Australia game was a bit iffy, if you want to talk about that penalty decision. They have played pretty well, though, haven't they, Danes?
They've done all right, but one thing they need to do is score probably a few more goals. I'm just looking here, they've only scored two goals so far, and probably one of the lowest scoring teams in the competition so far.
I think for Denmark, for me, if you can stop Eriksen playing, have not got a lot going forward. If he can get on the ball and really start to just dictate the game, I think Denmark, the sit men behind the ball, give it to Eriksen, let something happen. So they've gone through. I mean, it wasn't the toughest of group. You're beating out Peru and Australia. You're pretty much looking at that group as soon as the tournament started, saying France should top it. But Denmark, France, 0-0 draw. I mean, the game was extremely boring to watch, but sort of what you signed up for, them two play out a 0-0 draw, both go through.
Yeah, I agree, mate. And exactly what you said about Eriksen, he's their main outlet. I mean, we're kind of waiting for a Thomas Delaney to come of his own, because he was their highest assist player in the qualifiers. He hasn't really done too much. I don't know whether it's because he signed for Dortmund and maybe he's got one eye on playing for them next season. I don't know, but this is the World Cup. And if you don't turn up for this kind of occasion, then there's no real point, to be fair. But Richard, I really fancied Peru to get out of the group. And had it not been for them being so wasteful in front of a goal in their opening game against Denmark, it would have been them facing Croatia in the last 16. Now, Carrillo and Guerrero have been two of their standout players. Both got on the score sheet against Australia. What have you learned about the Peruvians?
I think they're just extremely resolute. I think going forward, for me, they're a little bit naive at sometimes. It seemed like it was just attack, attack, attack. Sometimes in these big tournaments, play out from the back. Look at a team like Portugal. They defend for their lives and then quick counter-attack, get it to Ronaldo, get it to a star player. I think that's been, for me, the real key to this World Cup, individuals over a team. I think if you're looking at the teams who are doing very well, you're looking at an England, Harry Kane, the main man. Looking at a Belgium, De Bruyne, Hazard, the main men for them. Croatia, Modric, playing very well. Peru don't really have that real star to come out of the team, to drag them over the line. I think that's probably what's not putting through.
Just going off topic a little bit, when you look at all the e-gamers that have been in these competitions that you commentated on, we look at, say, for example, Let's say Peru. Can you see any e-gamer that plays very similar to them? Can you associate a gamer to the way that Peru play in terms of their style?
Just trying to wrap my brain. Maybe someone like a Mo Aubameyang from Germany, very attack-driven. Just score as many goals. Peru, a little bit like Manchester City under Mancini. Just, we know that we'll try and score more, and that will be the thing. We're not going to play out for a 1-0 or a 2-0. Just get as many goals as we can. And I mean, that's probably what's been there undoing, you could say.
Absolutely. Well, Marcus Rojo's winner 5 minutes from time hauled Argentina to the last 16, keeping Messi's chances of adding the World Cup to his list of personal achievements. It also guarantees at least one more game where we'll see snippets of Diego Maradona off his face, gesticulating like a madman and dancing with women young enough to be his daughter. Brandon, Messi opened the scoring with a superb finish, silencing many doubters in the process. It wasn't a typical Messi performance, but he stepped up again when it mattered.
It's always the same situation as the Champions League, El Clasicos, the Ronaldo v Messi debate that, you know, happens so much in the real game and in the virtual one that we do, you know, which player is better to use. Obviously, lucky enough, you can have them in the same team in FIFA. Mm-hmm. But I think that's been a key thing of this tournament, is that Messi-Ronaldo debate. Obviously, Ronaldo was stealing the show, you've got to say, for at least two-thirds of the group stage. But that's what Messi can do again, that unbelievable two-touch into a finish. That second touch when he just... The ball, honestly, I've never seen someone touch a ball down like that before. And then just to put it into the back of the net on his weak foot, it just silenced all the... Or it didn't really silence it, it just made the debate even more now. And then Messi got his GOAT status back again.
That's right, mate. That's right. And you mentioned the control for the goal. I mean, he brought it down fantastically on his hip, but it was that second touch where 9 times out of 10, any other player, that would have come off his shin or come off his foot, and it would have gone way away from goal, but the way that he controlled it and the finish was superb as well. Goalkeeper had absolutely no chance.
Oh, for sure. And it's just one of those things where it's what Messi can do. You know, there's always been that kind of feeling around the Argentine team that they're not really strong at the back, or they're a bit all over the place with, you know, Willy Calavera, as much as he is a talented keeper. He always seems to be involved in the mash-up at the back or the mistakes we saw in their previous game. But he's carrying Argentina when they needed him most. And obviously they're going to be going through to the knockouts now. Can they go the full way? I don't think they can.
Is it because they're not strong defensively, or do you think there's other reasons?
Yes, yeah. I think defensively, you know, is the issue there for me. And it just, you know, William the goal as well, as much as I said, he is a good keeper. I just don't think they've got that edge. We've seen it so much in any sport, you know, teams that essentially do really well in the groups do awful in the, you know, in the latter stages in the competition. You know, you look at Portugal in the Euros, you know, didn't win a game until, you know, the latter stages in the knockouts. Teams just play differently. I don't get how all these tournaments work sometimes with teams, you know, playing well in the last group game, then having all this confidence to go forward, then teams playing exceptionally well. You know, you look at Uruguay, 9 points. They could go and lose their next game. You know, we see it so much in what we do as well, what me and Richard do. The amount of people that go in these kind of same kind of group tables, they go and win the first three games, and they just go and lose straight away in the knockouts. I just don't get the mindset sometimes of these teams or professionals.
Yeah, no, I fully understand, mate. The thing is, what you see over the years in tournament mode, you see turning points, you see major moments where you know, a team's fortunes will change just like that. And you know, Richard, for some reason, people were actually really surprised Argentina through a physical defender who scored some decisive goals in the past. You know, Rojo went up there, he scored another goal, another important goal for them. He actually did it against Nigeria 4 years ago, I think, if memory.
Yeah, in the 3-2 victory, I think that were. I think Argentina, for me, have just been a shambles back to front. I think, I don't want to point the finger, but that probably, the manager just looks lost on touchline at times. I don't think he knows his best starting 11. You're not playing Aguero, one of the best strikers in the world. You're not playing Dybala and Higuain, who have been tearing up the Serie A for Juventus. They've already got that connection together up top. Why are they not starting or even getting any sort of game time together? I think I just don't see them going any further than the round 16 Argentina.
The thing is, Sampaoli is a really good coach. He's won two Copa Americas with Chile. You know, he's done very well with Sevilla. But it just seems that he's not been able to stamp his authority in this actual team. And I don't know whether it's because there's a lot of experienced players there that kind of undermine him a little bit because of their names or because of their status or maybe the clubs that they play for. I mean, don't forget, he hasn't really coached a massive team at club level, so he doesn't really know how to handle big, big, big personalities.
Yep.
I mean, granted, he dealt with, you know, with Alexis Sanchez and a couple of others for Chile, but not on a regular basis. So when you're working with players week in, week out at club level, big names, you get used to it. Whereas he stepped in here, he wants to play three at the back. They've been playing four at the back for the whole tournament. So that tells me that someone is doing something in the background. I saw a little clip of him actually asking Messi if he can bring on Aguero, which is bizarre.
I think you saw it as well in that game against Nigeria at halftime. Obviously, he'd given the team talk at halftime, and then Messi were doing his own huddle team talk in the tunnel. So that clearly shows it's not a cohesive unit, this Argentina side whatsoever. Can Messi, arguably the greatest, pull it together? Can he drag Argentina as far as possible? I think he needs some of the other players in that team to, I won't say step up to his mark, but just play to their best potential.
I absolutely agree. And we mentioned turning points earlier. Now, if we're going to talk about Rojo's goal, and we saw the way the players celebrated with each other, we saw the camaraderie, we saw the fans. Do you both think that this will be the turning point for Argentina? Do you think it's made a massive difference?
Maybe it is. You know, maybe you needed that kind of shock to realise that maybe Germany left a little bit too late today, that as a top-seeded team, as a huge nation with a lot of pressure on you, you need to be getting to the knockout stage at least. You need to be impressing those fans. When you've got someone like Messi, you know, in your team, where I don't know how many more World Cups he's going to have, you've got to be really pushing on for those late stages. And I think one thing that, I know we're coming to England soon, but one thing I've seen about this England team, and you know, there's all the jokes that's coming home of that, there's just something. You know, we haven't got the strongest team. I know we're coming to England in the set, but you mentioned about that team kind of chemistry. One thing that England, I think, has just got this time round, they've just got this chemistry from nowhere. Like, every time we're scoring a goal, it's a 10-man celebration, obviously, other than Pickford. Like, it's just this whole team vibe at the moment. If Argentina can take that into the knockouts, you know, I think maybe they could push forward.
I personally don't see them getting past France. I think in their round of 16 game, I think France have got too much for them. Argentina. I don't see that defence being able to cope with the likes of Griezmann, Mbappe, Matuidi running from deep, Pogba running from deep. I think it could be quite messy, really. Pardon the pun.
Fair enough. Okay, VAR was used for a couple of Nigerian penalty appeals. Now, some people believe the first one was a soft penalty, but it's a penalty, it's a penalty at the end of the day. And the second for handball was turned down. What are your views on VAR? Do you think it's been a success?
Wow. How long have we got? I think, for me, I like the idea of being able to look at something again, but I just feel as though the game, like, I don't know if you saw the Egypt versus Saudi Arabia game, and the penalty got gave, and it took, I think it were about 3 minutes between the decision. For me, that's just too long. I think it should be more of like a tennis sort of appeal system, where if you truly believe that it's gone against you, you get three appeals during the game.
Right.
And you, as a team, maybe you can go over to the captain, goes over to the manager, says, look, that was a blatant handball, we need to appeal that because the referee's not seeing it. And then it goes to the VAR. It seems as though, like, the players know that VAR can be used. They run straight up to the referee, start drawing out the TV box. You get this whole disrepute. We've seen the commentators saying, like Sam Matafe saying, oh, that's going to be reviewed. That's not being reviewed. That's like, nobody knows what's happening. It just feels so disorganised.
What do you reckon, Brandon? Because looking at the incidents, I think, as Richard said about Sam Matafe saying, you know, this one's going to be reviewed and it's not, I'd have thought they'd have put like a little green icon or a red icon to pop up on the screen to say that, yeah, they are reviewing it, or someone, there's got to be some kind of communication problem. But bearing in mind that it's the first major tournament that's being used in, it hasn't been a complete disaster, has it?
No, I agree with some of the points Richard says, and I think there's been a number of pros and a number of cons for me. I look at it from the side of, you do get every decision, you've got players like running at the ref asking for VAR, which, you know, does take the mick a little bit. But at the same time, I remember like looking at like today, that South Korea situation, or back when Peru, I know they skied the penalty, but in their first group game, you know, those huge footballing moments where you need that decision to go for you and you get your justice. And then you've got the other side of it where a lot of them are soft, and you could say that at times there's that element of overthinking from the, maybe a referee's decision compared to what he's probably been used to in the past, just having to, you know, go over the decision and live with it. But overall, I think it's been nice to see it come in, but there's obviously a number of negatives that need to be looked at and fine tweaked.
Yeah, they'll get it right eventually. They'll get it right. We'll be talking about this in 4 years' time, saying, what were we complaining about 4 years ago?
Do you feel as though, Stel, that it's here to stay, VAR now?
I think so, mate. To be fair, when you look at the decisions that are actually made, it's the referees that make the decisions, aren't they? Let's be honest. I mean, we saw the handball the other day with Portugal and Iran. Now, for me, that's not a penalty. But he's looked at VAR, you know, he's seen it's ball to hand, and he's given it. So effectively, it's still the referee that makes the last decision, isn't it? So I think it's here to stay. I think they've spent enough money, and they'd look stupid. They'd look completely stupid if they decided to drop it. I mean, they've brought it in Italy. They're bringing it in Spain. They're bringing it in the Premier League. They have in Australia and MLS. So they've got it all over the world. So I cannot see them doing a U-turn. I really can't.
Okay.
But no, that's my point. Right, let's move over to Group F, where the Germans join the embarrassing list of nations who've crashed out at the World Cup at the group stage as defending champions. It was France in 2002 and Spain in 2014. Now, shock 2-0 defeat at the hands of South Korea means Jogi Löw's men end the group bottom. Sweden bounced back from their injury time loss to Germany by demolishing Mexico 3-0. Richard, embarrassing, dreadful, devoid of ideas. I mean, those are just a few words I can use to describe Germany's campaign. I can go on and on about it, to be fair. Now, this was undoubtedly the worst campaign from defending champions. They were awful from the first whistle, weren't they?
Yeah, I think you've got to look at it. Look at the team that finished the last game that played in the World Cup to what it is now. you're missing three leaders. You're missing Philipp Lahm at right back, Bastian Schweinsteiger in the centre of midfield, and Miroslav Klose up top. I think that team, you can just play around them. That's the core unit. And there were no, for me, apart from Toni Kroos, but he's not that sort of player, there were no game plan for this German team. They were getting balls out wide, putting them into the box, nothing coming of it. And then you even saw like the disrepute between the players. You saw Müller shouting at Hummels. You saw Boateng, one of the so-called best centre-halves in the world, playing. He played awful all tournament long. Manuel Neuer didn't look great in goal. I think all over the pitch, Germany just seemed not at the races whatsoever. And I'm sure there'll be a big, big investigation of why they weren't.
Yeah, and I think a certain Man City winger is laughing his arse off, to be fair, about what's happened. But that's for another story. Brandon, stats show Germany had 28 shots, but only 6 of them were on target. In fact, their best chance came from an unmarked Mats Hummels, who actually headed the ball on his shoulder and he actually went out. So much for the dominating for years to come comments after winning the title in 2014.
For sure. I think, as Richard said, you know, that turnover of some of Germany's best players leaving the squad and maybe them just lacking that leader. But still, you know, you're looking through that lineup, you've got Hummels in there, Neuer, Royce, Özil, Timo Werner, Goretzka. That's still an unbelievable team full of players, a lot of them that would be used to playing together in the Bundesliga. And of course, you've got a few extra players in there from the Premier League and vice versa. But that's a very good team on paper that should not be going out. And as you said, something needs to be looked at there. Something needs to be investigated, because I have no idea why it just didn't go well for them.
Well, do you know what? I think that a lot of those German players should be bronze cards on the next FIFA. especially the goalkeeper. And I think David De Gea will be one as well, to be fair. But anyway, that's just me being overcritical, as I always am with Dave. Gents, South Korea came into the tournament with no hope at all. Historically, they're a difficult team to break down and they're known for their hard work. But what a performance. What a result.
Unbelievable performance from Korea. They held their own all the way until they got the lucky break. In the end, 2 goals in 7 minutes. Germany had to push for it. I think you're looking at the Korean team, a lot of potential for that team. You've got the main man, Hong Min-son, up top. I personally really, really rate him as a forward. He can play off either side. He's got a fantastic eye for the game, can pick a pass. And I think playing with the likes of Eriksen, playing with Harry Kane at Spurs, it's only going to bring him on further as a player. Behind that, you've got some really, really... I think they just seem fit. They seem very physically fit. From minute 1 to minute 90, they were beating Germany to every single second ball. They were up for the headers. They just seem more up for it. And that shouldn't be a question. That shouldn't even be a topic of discussion in the World Cup round of 3, where you have to win, that the opposition beat you, not only on the scoreline, but beat you comfortably on the pitch as well, in every aspect.
It's a historic game, isn't it, for both nations. I mean, I don't think Germany have been humbled this bad since probably USA 94 when Bulgaria beat them 2-1. Even that was a decent Bulgaria team. So the Germans rarely get it wrong when it comes to the knockout phase or even the group phase. But yeah, they've been absolutely diabolical. But you know, the two teams are gone through, Sweden and Mexico, Brandon. Sweden beat Mexico kind of at their own game, didn't they? In the sense that they were kind of organised, they played on the counter-attack, and they were actually very, very physical. I think it's actually great to see another unfancied side make it into the last 16. What do you reckon?
For me, yeah, I completely agree. Sweden didn't really wow me at all going into this tournament or throughout that group F until today, when, to be honest, I put down Mexico to win, and I thought they would have won today, especially after that great start they had against Germany in their first group game, obviously beating South Korea just about 2-1. But today, obviously, nothing went to plan for Mexico. And Sweden, as I've said, I don't think they will go any further in the tournament, as much as there are a number of good FIFA esports Swedish players out there. But no, my question is, I know he's unfit and I know he's not playing anymore, but Park Jae-sung, could he have done something more for South Korea?
Has he retired? I don't even know if he's still playing.
No, he's gone. He's completely gone, don't get me wrong. But imagine if they had him in the team as well.
Park was always a very underrated footballer at United. You know, he did a lot of running, a lot of donkey work, but there was a lot more to his game as well. I mean, his positional awareness was fantastic. He, making late runs into the box, his vision was fantastic as well. I wouldn't say that he was one of these players that could really pick a pass from 30, 40 yards like a Varane or a Scholes. But he always made the easy things look good. And he's reliable. He was at a 7 out of 10 performance. And I think that's what you tend to get from the South Koreans. Again, historically, they've been solid units in the sense that they've got that work ethic. They play for each other. And you never hear of any infighting, do you? Never. Never at all.
It's always it's a unit. It's a team. I think, as I said earlier, there's been a lot of individuals at this tournament. And it seems like it's a tournament for the individual. That's why I think a team like a Croatia could go very far, or we might talk about them a little bit later on. Uruguay, for me, they're the favourites for this tournament. Not conceded a goal. They've got two world-class centre-halves, two world-class strikers. Everything else just seems to come together for them when they're playing the game. And they've got an ideology. They've got world-class players. But there's not a lot in their way.
Oh, you're right, mate. You're right. And Richard, Mexico, they qualified as winners of a poor CONCACAF group, and that was in the qualifying stage. But make no mistake about it, they're not here to make up the numbers, have we seen?
Oh, no, they're here to take the World Cup back to Mexico. Will they do it? I mean, they beat the reigning champions, didn't they? Comfortably in that first group game. Can they replicate that performance again against a team who, such as maybe like a Brazil or someone at the same level as Germany, and get the result? I'm unsure. But I love watching Mexico. They're a very, very attacking team to watch, playing three up top all the time. They've got a lot of pace about them. It reminds me a little bit of like a Leicester City when they won the league. There's no one really, like maybe Lozano, maybe Chicharito, they're probably the Vardy and the Mahrez to the team. Mm-hmm. Everybody else just does a job. They dig in. They get the ball to the better players, they know who the better players are, and they say, just create something.
Yeah, today they were pretty poor, but you know, bearing in mind what Sweden had to go for it, and Mexico were already through anyway, so I can see why they kind of took their foot off the gas. But Mexico are going to face Brazil in the next round, and Brazil made light work of Serbia, who hardly troubled the favourites. Goals from Paulinho and Thiago Silva sees them advance as group winners. Meanwhile, Switzerland's 2-1 win over Costa Rica also season through, and they faced Sweden in the last 16. Richard, Brazil have been in second gear so far, mate. Now, when you look here, it's the business end. Will we see a much more explosive Brazil?
I think you will. I think Brazil behind Uruguay, I think them two for me could be going all the way in this tournament. You've got unbelievable players. You've got the big names. You've got the Neymar, the Coutinho for me, probably behind Cristiano Ronaldo being player of the tournament. Coutinho just seems to make that side tick over. Strong across the back, finally, for Brazil. I think the humbling that they got to the hands of Germany in the World Cup will be scarred in a lot of those players' minds who did play that day.
Yep.
They'll will never, ever want to experience anything like that ever again. And then I think it shows how strong that Brazil team is when Fernandinho doesn't start. Because for me, he's the best player in that position in the Premier League, and he's not even getting in that team, really, getting in that starting 11.
Well, yeah, he's got Casemiro ahead of him, and Casemiro's come on.
Paulinho.
Paulinho, yeah. That's right, yeah. So you've got Casemiro, Paulinho, and also Coutinho in the middle of the park. So you've got three players there that are keeping him out. And Brandon, when you look at this Brazilian team, it feels more like a cohesive unit than they have been since 2002. I know they've got great individuals, but we saw tonight how close and tight-knit they are. I saw, you know, Gabriel Jesus covering at left-back when Marcelo was off injured. With Germany out, can anybody stop Brazil?
Three Lions.
Yeah. I think looking at, you know, all the big names in the tournament, you know, looking across the board, Spain, France, you know, Uruguay, Brazil. I think Brazil, you've got to say, are up there as favourites now, especially with Germany going out of the competition. As Richard said, you know, big names being kept out of the team like Fernandinho. And you look across there, you know, you've got likes of Marquinhos on the bench, You've got Firmino, obviously, from Liverpool there. You've even got Alessio from Roma keeping out Ederson, which I could say maybe is questionable. But overall, a really strong Brazilian team, and maybe they've got enough to go the full way. I'd definitely say they're up there for the favourites.
I agree, mate.
Go pretty much across all betting sites now, Brazil are the odds-on favourite. Spain just coming in closer behind. Not a lot of people spoke about Spain during this World Cup so far, but somehow they topped their group. I don't know how, really, because they've not played good, I wouldn't say, to Spain's level in any of the group games. They were pretty good against Portugal, but it was the Ronaldo show, so you're not going to remember their performance. But I think Spain just slowly going about the work. Could we see it returning to Spain? Potentially.
Do you know, it's interesting you mentioned the 7-1 humbling that Brazil took against the Germans back in 2014. I'm looking at that Germany lineup, and you've got Manuel Neuer, Mats Hummels, Boateng, Müller, Toni Kroos and Mesut Özil. Those are the players that played in that game that are still in the squad. When you look at Brazil, only one, that's Marcelo. Yep. The rest of them aren't anywhere near the squad. And I'm talking, they're miles away from the squad. Oscar, yep. Bernard, Fred.
David Luiz, not even mentioned.
Oof, yeah. Luis Gustavo, Maicon. These players ain't ever going to play for Brazil ever again. Let's be 100% honest about it. But yeah, they're going to go all guns blazing in the last 16 in the knockouts, I believe. Gents, let's talk quickly about Switzerland versus Sweden. I know that sounds like a really boring game, but I think it could be a belter. How do you think this will go?
Oh, Switzerland for me.
Yeah.
All day. Yeah. Again, I haven't been overwhelmed by both of those teams, but as I said, just Sweden, I know obviously they've got through, but they just, going into the tournament, they weren't really a team that I'll be looking at to go, you know, to go anywhere near the quarterfinals at least, let alone the full way.
Richard?
I think Switzerland as well for me. They've got better, I'd say they've got better individuals in every position than Sweden, but I think if you could handpick any tie to, if you're a Swiss fan or a Sweden fan, you're picking the opposite team. You're saying, yeah, we'll play them. Either them or Russia, for me. I think Russia just ran out of steam now and started the competition very well, but got beat pretty handedly against Uruguay.
Yeah, I think Russia facing Spain, aren't they? And Portugal got Uruguay in the next round, so that'll be a very tasty game. Before we wrap the show up, let's talk about England. We can't not talk about England. It's been a fantastic tournament for them so far. We saw Harry Kane grab a hat-trick, albeit a strange hat-trick, really, that third goal. Absolutely destroyed Panama. Comfortable win against Tunisia, even though they kind of made it difficult for themselves. What do you guys make of this England squad? Because I'm looking at the previous ones, you know, with your Ferdinands, your Scholeses, all this kind of stuff. And as we've seen before, as we've heard before, Rio was saying, you know, the United players would be separate from each other. The Chelsea players would be separate. They wouldn't talk to each other. But now you've got the likes of Sterling and Jesse Lingard, who play for rival clubs. They're joking about with each other. They know each other really well. And the attitude and the mentality in this team is as strong as I've ever seen it, probably since Euro 96. How far do you think England will go? Are you guys confident that England can win this?
I think for me, they're a team. And you can see that on the pitch and off the pitch. I think that's come down from Gareth Southgate. Just looking at, I think the big thing for me that showed that we've actually got something about us, obviously we're beating Panama handedly, the set piece. Sometimes, in a game like that, when you're 3-0 up, it'd be easy just for someone to shoot. We played that set piece exactly the way it was meant to be played from the training ground. And that's one of how many. That just shows that we've got something about us. Defensively, I'm a little bit worried still. But if Harry Kane keeps scoring and we keep creating chances and Lingard, I think he's got another level to that as well. The link up between Lingard and Sterling starting to blossom a little bit. Jordan Henderson, he's becoming one of the nation's favourite midfielders, slowly but surely, does everything right in that midfield, keeps it ticking over. Just for me at the back, just strengthen up at the back. From set plays, we need to be better. And I'll be looking forward to this Belgian game. I think Lukaku's not going to play, Martinez said. So will it give us a true reflection of where we're at? I think we need to play against a big striker, a strong striker, a physical presence, a Cavani. a Suarez, someone like that, a Ronaldo, to really see where we're at defensively. But so far, it's all looking rosy for England.
I would say as well, you know, leading on from what Richard said, I think, you know, he's bang on there about at the back, even though we are playing that five at the back. It's just those one or two stray passes that seem to be going away, whether that's because we're not up against maybe a Premier League-esque or a Major League striker. You know, there's nothing against the two nations we've played. Maybe they needed, as Rich said, that test to be tested a little bit more. But if Harry Kane's scoring your goals, you're going to have a good tournament. Everyone, as you said, just seems to have this really good team ethic, and everyone wants to work hard, everyone wants to play, everyone's competing for positions, and you've got to take your hat off to Gareth Southgate, because there's something behind the scenes that's going on the training ground, and the way we're playing at the moment is we're just full of confidence.
Well, let's see how they get on against Belgium, and then the last 16, where they're probably going to face, I hope they face someone like Colombia or even Senegal. I'd like to see Senegal and Colombia get out of that group, but I don't think that will happen. I don't think it's possible for both of them, can they? I don't know, but anyway, it is what it is. Well, gents, look, thank you ever so much for coming on the show. Really appreciate your time. It's been great talking to you guys. Hopefully we can do this again sometime soon. Before I let you go, Twitter handles, Instagrams, you name it. Show the floor is yours.
Go on, Brandon.
At Beast of Esports, across pretty much everything. So, yeah. But no, thanks a lot for coming on the show.
At rbuckley1998 across Twitter and Instagram.
Great stuff. Gents, thank you ever so much for your time. Everyone that's still listening, you can give us a follow on Twitter at Shoot the Defence. We have a Facebook group page. Join it. And we have an Instagram, Shoot the Defence. It's that simple. Until next time, take care.